Let me ask you first what it was like to sit down and write about some of these admittedly complicated issues, which often involve sort of dualities, the balancing of things which can sometimes be in conflict. I know you've lived with that all of your political life and since your presidency, but what did you learn or what did you discern as you sat down and actually wrote about many of these complex things in this new book?
Well, it took me about 4 years, Greg, to write this book, and I finished writing it about the 1st of July, so things that have happened since then are not in the book. And I wrote it because I see this present administration as having promulgated a profound and radical change compared to all previous presidents, Democratic or Republican, in basic American moral values, the things that have made our country great. And they are so extensive and so profound that I thought it was time to remind the American people of it and to precipitate a more open and thorough debate about which direction our country wants to go in the future. For instance, we've abandoned the principles of our country for the last 100 years or so of not going to war unless our own security was directly threatened. Now we have a new policy, publicly promulgated by the president, of preemptive war. That is, we reserve the right as a powerful military country to go to war against the people and kill their citizens, if necessary, just to change an administration. We've also abandoned America's longtime role as a champion of civil liberties and privacy at home and human rights around the world. Our vice president just recently went and openly encouraged the Congress to pass a law that would permit the CIA officially and legally to torture prisoners at Guantanamo and in Al-Gharib prison and so forth. We've abandoned every nuclear arms control agreement that's been negotiated since the time of Dwight Eisenhower. And we've accumulated enormous deficits, $4 trillion in the last 5 years, primarily not because we've increased government expenditures for health and well-being of people and jobs, but just giveaway programs for the richest American people at the expense of the working people of this country. All of these policies that have been adopted by this administration are radical departures from what all presidents in the past have espoused and all governments have espoused.
One of the things that causes you great concern is something that you lay at the feet of fundamentalists when you say that they have managed to change the nuances and subtleties of historic debate into black and white rigidities.
Well, that's certainly true. A fundamentalist, by definition, and I describe this a little bit in my book, believes that they have a unique relationship with God. And therefore, by definition, everything they believe is absolutely correct. Anyone who disagrees with them at all is wrong, inherently, and therefore inferior. And they try to promulgate this absolute belief on the rest of the nation and the rest of the world. And anybody who believes with them is okay. Anyone who disagrees is wrong. We even have a national policy of that. If you're with us, 100% okay. If you're against us on anything, then you're against us. And that's a definition of fundamentalism. And the most important thing is that the fundamentalist in religion and the fundamentalist in government now are openly and aggressively trying to merge the two, breaking down that wall between church and state that had been a policy of our country and one of our basic moral values.
That brings to mind a question which you posed to yourself in right at the heart of this book and in the chapter, which I think is especially interesting. You say you've been asked whether your Christian faith, Christian beliefs, ever conflicted with your secular duties as president. And it says something about your answer that you've posed the question as you have with two facets, your Christian beliefs and your secular duties as president.
Yes.
And of course, others who probably wouldn't see them as separately as you did.
Well, I happen to be a devout Christian. I'm not bragging about it on radio, but it's a fact. I've never believed that Jesus Christ would approve abortion unless the mother's life or health was directly threatened, or unless maybe it was a result of rape or incest. And so I have a problem with abortion. But I was sworn to uphold the laws and Constitution of the United States as interpreted by the Supreme Court. So I did. But I tried every way I could as president to minimize the need for abortions. I described it in the book.
Well, and you talk about how you worked very hard to do what you could for the sake of those young women, for instance, who might then be in better position to keep their babies and so on.
That's right. Two-thirds of the women who get an abortion claim that the reason is that they can't afford to support another child. So we had women in children's programs, the WIC program, so-called, that I initiated, and we also tried to improve the income of a very low income people. This administration, by the way, has frozen the minimum wage at $5.15, an hour lower than any minimum wage in a developed country in the world, while the Congress have increased their own salaries by $30,000 a year during that same period. So keeping people poverty-stricken and promoting the well-being of the richest people on earth is one of the things, indirectly I admit, that encourages women to have abortions when otherwise they might not. And I think there's a very good opportunity to decrease dramatically the number of abortions, as did happen, by the way, under the previous administration, when the general well-being of people was improved economically. So also to promote the possibility of having easier adoptions if a mother wants to go to term and have her baby and then let someone else take care of it. Those kind of things can be done, and I described them in quite some definition in the book. Even though we do live under the so-called Roe versus Wade ruling, which causes me some concern, but even under that, we can dramatically reduce the number of abortions if we want to.
A last quick question, but it's a complicated one, I'm afraid. For people of religious faith trying to wrestle with the difficult issues of our day, what is your advice to them? How is one to fold one's own religious faith and convictions into the political realm?
Well, let me just speak for Christians, because that happened to be what I think may partially answer your question. I think we should try to emulate the basic teachings of Jesus Christ. We worship the Prince of Peace, not the Prince of Preemptive War. I think Jesus Christ promoted freedom and of people. I think he reached out and tried to nurture the poor. I think there's no doubt that he advocated rendering unto Caesar the things that are Caesar, and to God the things that are God, the separation of church and state. So we can search through the scriptures and find out, to answer your question, how we can apply the teachings of our religion. I think that Christ promotes justice. I think he promotes humility, service, forgiveness, compassion, love, those kind of things. Quite different, in my opinion, from what some of the fundamentalists promulgate. And I try to describe this in constructive, not condemnatory language and principles in the book.
The book, again, is called Our Endangered Values, America's Moral Crisis, published by Simon & Schuster. And former President Jimmy Carter, a great honor and privilege for me to speak with you today on The Morning Show. I thank you.
Thank you, Greg. I've enjoyed it very much.